Hey, what's going on? I hope you are having a good week as always. So on this week's episode of the Welcome to the Metaverse podcast, we are diving into the world of film and Web3. So in this episode, we talk about the legacy film industry and how most films are brought to market, and discuss what a new Web3 model enables, even in these early experimental stages. Our guest on this week's show is the awesome Ben Klein, founder and CEO of Mugsy Media Corp, a Web3 film studio looking to find the most experimental ways to link blockchain technology with the art of filmmaking. He's previously made content for Morning Brew and Barstool Sports, and was a production assistant on Madam Web, the upcoming Marvel film, Saturday Night Live, and Academy Award winner Luca Guadagnino, hope I've said that correctly, as upcoming film Challengers 2. We also talk about the NFT project that is cleverly intertwined with Ben's studio called Wacko Worms. You'll find out in this episode exactly why, but for any listeners from the community, Ben is out of character in this conversation. This show is of course brought to you by the brilliant EveryRealm, and if you're looking to kick off 2023 with the most comprehensive online learning platform for the Metaverse and Web3, then you definitely need to check out Realm Academy, and I have a special offer for you. So Realm Academy is back with three self-paced modules: Metaverse Foundations, Intro to Blockchain, and Advanced Topics in Web3. And as a listener to this show, you will get 30% off each of these self-paced modules. You'd be silly not to do that. The code you need is FRANKS30, that's FRANKS, and the number 30. Just enter it at checkout to save yourself 30%. I'll tell you a bit more about it later in the show, and full details are in the show notes right now. As always, nothing in this podcast is financial or investment advice. Always do your own research. And with that said, let's dive into this week's episode. Ben, really good to have you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Luke.
Of course. It's good to have you. So, you know, we're in January right now. We are in the midst of a bear market. The real builders are still building. There's lots of exciting stuff going on. But what's your general read? How are you thinking about Web3 and the NFT space at the minute, just out of interest?
Look, you know, Game of Thrones fan over here. Winter is coming. You know, a lot of people say it's here. I think we still have a long way to go. You know, the space is correcting itself. You know, we weren't where we needed to be. There obviously was a bubble, and you know, these problems have been, or the outlook on everything has been exacerbated by FTX and everything that came after that. You know, these are dark times. There's no denying, but that means two things. Number one, it's a great time to build, and number two, it's important to look to the future and, you know, catch the trends now, because that's what's going to pave the way for what's to come.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, these are the moments that test you, and often the next biggest IPs, the next biggest companies, and you know, often as well, some of the biggest money is made in these bear market times. Also, the meme game gets very strong. There was an amazing video that went out today. I'll link it below. It's like a whole motion captured music video with an entire song about the NFT space and everyone sticking together and stuff. It was just quite hilarious and high quality as well. So I'll link it below if anyone hasn't seen that. But yeah, we're going to talk about film industry and the Web3 model, how it's changing stuff, the awesome film that you've been working on, and your studio as well. We'll get into all of that. But everyone has a kind of like weird and wonderful story of how they went down the rabbit hole and ended up in the Web3 space. So I'd love to hear yours a little bit. Tell us how you ended up here.
Sure. So I've been a film guy my whole life, you know, just been absolutely obsessed with especially some of the auteurs like Stanley Kubrick and Spielberg and Scorsese and whatnot. So I've always been looking for work, creating content. And I found myself working at an awesome company called Morning Brew. They're a business newsletter media company, and they're just rapidly growing. Like, side note, they just hit 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, TikTok, rapidly growing their content game. They just got Dan Toomey, who's always crushing it, and a great team with them. And so I was working with them and learning a lot about the business world, which is always fascinating. And this was 2020, 2021 bull run. So naturally, if you're a business company, you're doing content, especially with a comedic spin, NFTs are going to come up. So I started learning about it, doing research for videos, and I got really interested in the passion behind so many of these NFT communities. You know, people were obsessed. You know, you go into Discord channel, there's 25 languages back during the peak, all saying, let's go, woohoo, LFG. But that was a problem. You know, like, there was something really beautiful about that. And I was thinking to myself, there's such palpable passion here, but it's not really directed clearly. You know, they love the art and they're united in that. But like I said, it's a lot of rocket emojis and wag me, which for the non-Web3 makers means we all gonna make, you know. So I was thinking, the filmmaker in me says, what if we got this passion and excitement and directed it to a film? So that's kind of how the gears started turning towards my current project and company.
Love it. Good stuff. And we'll dive into more about that in the film you've made, which is very good and very funny. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But maybe we could kind of take everyone on a bit of a journey through kind of Web3 and the film industry. So maybe you could just, for a bit of context, run us through how a film starts getting created and comes to market in a traditional sense, because it's not something that I really know how that happens typically. It'd be interesting to know that, and then we can see the sort of traditional model and then have a look at the Web3 model and everything that's happening here and see kind of how they compare and what's happening. So maybe you could just talk us through that.
Sure. So the traditional path for a filmmaker is really you start out with nothing. You know, for the most part, 99% of the time, people just want to create a film and they either have family and friends fund it or they fund it themselves and they create it and see what happens. If you're an independent filmmaker, you're going to keep trying and you're going to see how things are going to work out. Just rewinding to where you asked where like the film and movie industry currently works and where it is. It's in, you know, reboots and existing IP and doing Indiana Jones 5 and doing, you know, another 20 Marvel films and all this stuff. And there's a reason for that. And I think we're going to talk about that later. But, you know, you see why studios and, you know, everything today is struggling. You know, we're in a recession or we're about to be in a recession. And people will say, Ben, why are you still in Web3? Why are you still in crypto? It's on the toilet. I'm like, have you looked at Tesla? Have you looked at Amazon? Have you looked at Apple? You know, nothing's on fire right now. You know, it's definitely dark times, as we said at the beginning of this talk. And I think that it goes the same for the film industry. I mean, look at Babylon. That movie just came out and they spent $250 million on it and it made $3.5 million first weekend, you know? And that had Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Toby Gray, all these brilliant and major A-list stars in it with Damien Chazelle, one of the biggest directors in the game. So there's no set formula except for things that have proven to be successful. And you see how studios are really starting to direct and their funds and attention towards done deals or things that are guaranteed to at the very least break even. So when you look at what an independent filmmaker is doing these days, that climate makes it much harder to say, hey, I have this really cool independent idea. And they're not being, you know, Scorsese and Tarantino, both of them have talked about this in their podcast. Like their independent filmmakers aren't being trusted the way they once were, and you can't even blame the studios given the climate, but it's just a very difficult time for all.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I think we're seeing that across a lot of different content, and it's almost this backs against the wall, like, got to stick with what is known and what works and what's going to make money to kind of, get everyone through, which is interesting. And you were talking about how a filmmaker would start. You know, I guess it's hard to kind of break through to that level if independent filmmakers are not maybe getting as much support, or it's not in a climate where it's easy to break through. So for those big studio films, the Marvel films and the rest of it, you know, when a film like that does get made and does make money, where does that kind of value accrue? Because that's something we'll look at the Web3 model. It's a very different model about who gets the value. So yeah, what happens when a film does well in the traditional film industry?
So it's the studio will take a lot of it. People will get paid, you know, a lot of that depends on the film itself. You know, if you're making a sequel, then you're going to see the talent who returned from the first one. They're going to be making double, triple, even four times what they made the original, depending on how well the original film did. So, you know, there's no set answer to that question. But you can see right now, you know, to pivot the question a little bit, it's just like, how do they value the success of a film? And, you know, of course you have the box office. And of course you have, you know, streaming numbers. But the number one, the thing with streaming numbers is you're not sure how well they really did, because for Netflix, for example, self-reports the numbers. So there's no really way to be sure about any of that. But the other thing is that cultural zeitgeist is one of the biggest ways to tell how a film has made an impact. You know, if you are starting to see memes of a movie and you start seeing people talk about it on Twitter and your group chats are blowing up being like, oh, did you see this? That's really how a film grows. You know, I think the meme factor has been, you know, I was smiling as I say this because it's pretty crazy to think about. But when you look at the horror film that just came out, I think it was last weekend or maybe the weekend before, Megan, it knocked Avatar off the top spot. And I saw the trailer and I'm a huge horror fan, if you can't tell from my current film. And I looked at the trailer, I'm like, what is this? But now I got to go see it because it's really connecting to the TikTok generations. You know, this really well-written Hollywood Reporter article just said.
This show is brought to you by EveryRealm, who are your portal to the metaverse. Now, as a listener to this show, I have an offer for you that you do not want to miss. 30% off the most comprehensive online learning platform for the metaverse, Realm Academy. If you want to level up quick and learn about metaverse foundations, intro to blockchain and advanced topics in Web3, taught by leaders at top companies in the industry like Ledger, The Sandbox and Dragonfly Capital, then Realm Academy is the place to do it. The code you need is Franks30, that's FRANKS and the number 30. Just enter it at checkout for 30% off. absolutely no-brainer. Grab it quick. Join tens of thousands of others who've already made their way to the metaverse. Search Realm Academy or check out the show notes for all the links and info you need. And now it's back to the show. Interesting. Yeah, and that's kind of the disruption that we've seen with content, right? Years ago, it was very gatekept and that if you wanted to break through, you know, you had to kind of prove yourself, and then you had to get supported by, I would guess, a major studio or someone bring you on, and you had to kind of get through that level of people in the really traditional way, know the right people, be in the right circles. The good thing that's happened with the internet is obviously, you know, lots of people can create short films and begin their journey on YouTube, online, and also this kind of meme factor that you talked about. You know, it may not be the most expensive film that blows up, because if it catches the zeitgeist and the meme culture and the internet culture, well, suddenly that breaks down those barriers a little bit. So I guess that's kind of where we are now. So with all of that in mind, would you say the current model works? Are you kind of happy with that? Or do you think there's a problem there leading on to kind of what Web3 brings, which we'll come on to next? But yeah, would you see any kind of problems with the current setup?
Well, sure. I mean, number one, it just doesn't always reward the artist. And that ties into, you know, we were talking about the come up of a filmmaker, you know, whether you go to film school, whether you're not, whether you just go out there and freelance your way to the top. There's no one right path. But the truth of the matter is, no matter what path you take, it'll boil down to your success and the results of your work will boil down to the opinions of a very small group of people. And, you know, that can work in your favor, that can work not in your favor. You know, I'm not saying whether or not that's the right play, but, you know, I'm sure that there have been brilliant filmmakers who never broke that ceiling because the first critic or two that saw their film didn't like it. That put a sour taste in people's mouths. And it always had, you know, that stamp of disapproval that, you know, really hurt that individual's career, where, you know, Babylon, like, not to bring it back up, it did not do so well with the critics, and yet I saw it and I thought it was brilliant and phenomenal, and I didn't even love La La Land. You know, I'm not one of those Damien Chazelle obsessions, but I really liked Babylon. So, you know, it's not always based on the critics. You know, there's always going to be films that you never see. You know, there's this Indian film called RRR. It's a Tollywood film, not Bollywood, and it blew up. You know, so they created it early last year, so 2021, and they put it on Netflix because they did not advertise it. They didn't do any marketing for it, really, especially in the United States. And yet, out of nowhere, it blew up to number one. Now, this is a 3-hour long Indian epic that is spoken almost entirely in the native language. And yet, this blew up here because you cannot always predict what people are going to like. And people are going to try their best, but sometimes all you got to do is put it out there for people to, you know, consume themselves. And they'll react to it accordingly and hopefully fall in love with it.
Yeah, that's the real test of an audience loving it, isn't it? And like I say, you can't always predict exactly that. And so let's talk about the Web3 model then, how that kind of maybe disrupts the current model that we've seen. We have this now native digital asset ownership layer, which, you know, involves NFTs, and that's what blockchain enables and all the things we talk about on the show a lot. But maybe in your own words, you could kind of talk us through the Web3 model when it comes to filmmaking and creating a film, maybe using your film as a case study as well, if you'd like to, and just talk us through how that model changes things and what it enables.
Absolutely. So to answer that question, I'm going to first tell you how the Web 2 model disrupted the film industry. Because, you know, with the introduction of YouTube and TikTok and back in the day of Vine, people were consuming free content. They were laughing, they were enjoying it, and they did not pay a dime to enjoy it. And, you know, that's why you see, we're talking about what studios are favoring these days. You can't blame them, you know, because when they fund a film with a massive CGI budget and you get Iron Man and Captain America fighting and the massive explosion in New York City, people want to see that. They feel like they're paying for an experience because it elicits excitement. And you can't really get that on YouTube, because even if you're some of the top YouTubers, you know, you're not dropping $250 million to create one YouTube video. So that's what the studios are willing to pay for. So when you look at Web3, it's kind of this way to say, okay, here's a way to create content that you don't have to pay $13.99 for Netflix or $12.99 for Netflix for a month. If you want to watch Stranger Things, you have to pay for all of Netflix. There's no renting Stranger Things or buying Stranger Things from Netflix. And you're stuck with this whole massive library of content that you may or may not even want. So what Web3 does is it boils things down. And it empowers artists, number one, to create their own content, potentially self-fund their own content. And I'll talk about a case study of that later. But what it also does is creates a community around your work. And it also empowers the consumer to pay for only what they want.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? That is a unique new model, and it's only really enabled by Web3. So maybe you could dive in a little bit deeper there and talk to us about how, you know, the Web3 model, why it would differ maybe from like a crowdfunding model, which uses the Web2, the internet that we all know, to potentially raise money for a film independently. And that's been something that we've seen and has been successful in various cases. But Web3 goes another layer deeper with community and assets and everything else. So yeah, maybe we could go a bit deeper there and just explore what the Web3 model enables.
Sure. Well, there's one thing that it enables that I'm not sure I entirely agree with, but it has been gaining certain popularity. And what it is people get to have their say. You know, when you have an NFT collection and you create a DAO based off of these holders who, you know, are a part of this community now that votes on what they want to see, I'm not sure that's the future. And I'll tell you why. People consume media, they watch TV and they watch a movie. After a long day of work, they sit down on the couch, they grab a beer, and they just want to turn their mind off and have an escape. You know, I don't see someone wanting to sit down and say, let me choose my adventure here, or let me watch something that I decided who the actor was, or I decided what happens in the story. You know, I decided that character A goes to the castle instead of going to the dungeon. You know, these things are things that I'm not sure the audience wants to control. However, that is a really cool thing that Web3 does empower. I think another thing that using the Web3 model allows is a really unique crowdfunding aspect. And Miguel Faust is a filmmaker who spoke on the panel with me at NFT London, where we met. And he self-funded a short film called Caladita. And he's a Punks holder. And he said to a bunch of Punks holders and just people all around saying, hey, I want to turn this short film into a feature film. I sold it to HBO Max. This is a really great film. And if you buy my NFT here, that money will go to creating the feature. And you'll have exclusive access to, you know, keeping up with the behind the scenes. You get a weekly update in this. So that dynamic, I think, was really cool, because when it's crowdfunding, people pay, and yet there's not, number one, it's not on the blockchain. So, you know, you could pay and donate something, but there's no transactional relationship aside from just paying the filmmaker. And, you know, maybe you'll get like an email thank you. When it's on the blockchain, he can directly send you and update your wallet and update the asset that you own to show what they've been doing that week, or to show that, or you know, create a new asset to update them on all the exciting things that they're doing. So I think that's something really special. And I'm sure that more filmmakers are going to go after that and find creative ways to adapt to it and expand on what, you know, the groundwork that Miguel laid out. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, I think, and this is good to remember, like all of these early experiments are exactly that, aren't they? The early kind of ways of seeing how this model works. But the idea of having, you know, funding a film that you love or backing a filmmaker by owning an NFT that can then become, you know, membership and can unlock cool stuff, both in the physical world and in the digital world, and is part of your journey as that film potentially grows, and also that asset, you know, if the film really pops off, it might become very valuable as a key early part of merchandise or anything else. And as the IP maybe expands, it kind of unlocks this whole new world in theory, doesn't it? And we're seeing, you know, some of these experiments as well. And we talked in the traditional model where, you know, when a film does do really well, often a lot of that revenue goes to the studio, which, you know, makes sense. They've been a big part of it to a degree, but maybe less so to the artists and the people kind of creating it. In the Web3 model, there's a chance for that value to go back to the community who have supported it from the beginning, and the artist as well. So would you agree there's that kind of side of it that Web3 introduces, and that's different?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always the factor where, and Miguel's a really talented filmmaker, but to, you know, continue to use that as an example, if this film, you know, is super successful, the value of the NFTs that the holders now own is going to go up, you know, so they're directly investors in a film, you know. So now as a filmmaker, instead of having to go to three or four angel investors or ask for a loan from your family, or, you know, somehow get a studio to invest in your film, now you can get the people, and they actively invest, and it's many more people, so you have a community around it to, you know, help market the film and share it and get more eyes on it. So that's certainly a really special way, the ability for your asset that you own that's a part of the film to increase in value.
Yeah, for sure. All right, tell us a little bit about Moxie Media Corporation then, your studio which you set up, and I'd love to hear a bit more about what you've worked on and kind of what your ultimate goal is for you.
Sure. So Moxie Media Corp is my company, and essentially just how it started is I was talking about the bug that I caught while working for Morning Brew. Months later, quit everything and buckled down on this. So I founded the company, and then I wrote, produced, directed, and kind of acted in the Wacko Worms film. Now, at the same time of working on the film, I started marketing the Wacko Worms NFT project. So just to talk about our first project, which is Wacko Worms, and we're working on a million things, right? But Wacko Worms was our first experiment in the space and trying to find what works. So what I did is I've been a fan of found footage horror films for my entire life. I think that, you know, it totally encapsulates what I love about film in the sense of, number one, it's a challenge. It's like, okay, in a normal movie, you could have unlimited angles and camera location. In this, it's a handheld camera that one of the actual characters in the film is holding. And then the other thing is the budget. You know, Blair Witch Project was made for allegedly $15,000, probably a little bit more than that. But that's, you know, when you look at the budgets that we were talking about, you know, that is substantially smaller than everything we've discussed. And that from a business perspective, which, you know, as we've talked about, I've always been in love with filmmaking, interested in business. That's just fascinating because Blair Witch Project has made hundreds of millions of dollars off of that minuscule budget. And anyway, but that's, you know, that's all besides the point. Because what I wanted to do is take the next step with found footage film. So there's this film VHS directed by David Bruckner, or it's an anthology horror film, one of them directed by Bruckner. And, you know, he's become one of my favorite filmmakers. And we've hopped on the phone many times where, you know, he's just light his journey and ways to assist me. And, you know, just creative approaches he took to create VHS, which was, of course, found footage. And terrifying. I recommend it to anybody who's listening to this podcast. So, you know, speaking to him and trying to develop my own found footage film and also trying to dip my beak into the Web3 world, I finally had that light bulb moment. And I realized that the blockchain, with its inherent transparency and how transactions are incontrovertible and all of that that goes along with it, if I could find a way to use the blockchain to perpetuate the realism of a found footage film, that would be groundbreaking. That has never been done before, and it would be, you know, my little way of advancing my favorite genre. So what I did is I wrote the story, which is about, you know, a group of postgraduates in New York City. We're founding an NFT project. They actually intend to rug the NFT project. They're just making it to become well on their gambling debt on the New York Jets, who always have a tragic season. And you watch them put it together, you know, and you see them find our artist, Tadeo, who is, of course, a real artist who's done a million successful projects for art blocks like Dino Pals, which had one of them sell for like 375 ETH. We have Undead Wyverns. We have, he's a genius. And, you know, he's, of course, referenced in the film because everything is, quote, real. Now, things are wrong for our characters when, you know, the smart contract developer has a dark secret, which I won't reveal if anyone wants to check out the film. And spoiler alert, but the witch, Vic, who, yes, is a witch, she curses the code so that anyone who mints an NFT becomes possessed under her control. And Vic is what I like to call an activist witch because she is obsessed with Web3 and blockchain and crypto. She thinks it's the future and is tired of waiting for widespread adaptation. So in her eyes, the Wacko Worm selling out means it's 10,000 people who are an army of bloodthirsty murderers here to kill anyone who doubts crypto. So obviously absurd, but a couple things about that is, number one, it had to be absurd because the Web3 space is inherently absurd. But the other thing is that in my eyes, I saw that the curse really serves as an allegory for the crash, for the bubble popping. You know, the film follows these founders who are really, my character included, pieces of shit. You know, they're looking to, they don't really care. The whole time they're talking about how they're trying to make money. They're taking advantage of Hideo and of Vic, even though they don't realize she's taking advantage of them as well. And they get what's coming for them. In every horror film, people who get killed, they have to, in some way, shape, or form, get what's coming to them. Now, I'm not saying they deserve it, but I'm saying that when you're writing a story, you know, it's the team sneaking out to make out by the tree at night who get murdered in Friday the 13th. You know, it's always, they have to do something that some people may consider to be wrong. And that's why I wanted, in this one, the founder's sin to be rug pulling. And they planned to, you know, they were just really excited to make money, sell out the worms, get what they sought out to do. And, you know, at the end, who knows what happens after the credits? Maybe Nadav's in jail. Maybe Kofi's in a mental institution because he can't cope with having his friend committed a murder. Vic disappeared. You know, we don't know what happened, but we do know that they absolutely did suffer. Pay for their sin. So that was really the reason why things had to go wrong for them. And I thought the curse served as a really good parallel to the crash and how a lot of people who were scamming and making a lot of money in crypto, they also got what they deserved. And unfortunately, of course, a lot of good people got caught up in the crossfire, but that's why it's a correction period and, you know, things can't get worse than they were. So we are on the up and up. But the beauty of it is that the NFT project that viewers of my film watch from get created from beginning to end, you know, You watch them put every nook and cranny together of this NFT project together. The NFT project that the characters are working on is real. So let me just rewind for a little bit. When you look at the history of found footage films, okay, you have Blair Witch Project in 99. All they had to do was have it be, you know, handheld and presented as real. They told audiences it was real and they believed. You know, people were terrified and it was a major success critically and box office. Fast forward to 2012 when a found footage film Unfriended came out. Unfriended was unapologetically, I don't want to say Gen Z, but unapologetically a part of the social media age. You know, the whole found footage thing is evolved into taking place on a computer screen. Now, what's it called? The Den did it, I think, a year or two before. But, you know, this was the biggest critical success using the computer screen gag. What they did with that is they made Facebook pages and social media accounts for the character. And I remember seeing that and being like, whoa, social media is the fresh hot thing. I could follow these characters on Instagram. That is the coolest thing ever. Maybe it is real. Who knows? You know, that was totally an awesome step forward. You know, Cloverfield in 08 did something similar, creating a bunch of websites for the fake companies that you see in the film. But anyway, it's been done. You know, it's 2022 or 2023 now. You know, social media is no longer the fresh hot thing. But in my opinion, blockchain totally constitutes that fresh hot thing. I mean, it may not be so hot anymore, but you know, in the tech world, people who understand how the blockchain actually works, they absolutely recognize its potential. And as I said, that ability to take it for how every transaction is incontrovertible and how everything is so transparent, I think that the fact that the NFTs in the film are real and exist on the blockchain perpetuates that realism in a way never done before, which is why this is so exciting. So back to what I was saying, you know, when I was giving you the rundown of how we started it, you know, I went off on this tangent after telling you, you know, started marking the NFT project. The community was under the impression that, you know, the founders were filming their progress and we would release it alongside the mint. Like, hey, check out this video blog of like us putting it together. Enjoy. We're transparent. We hope you enjoy. And, you know, people were really excited for that. They had no idea it would end up being a horror movie because the smart contract developer has that dark secret. So, you know, we released the film on the day of the supposed mint. So, you know, we start promoting the mint, people are getting excited, we have a community that's incredibly engaged. And yet on the day of the mint, we ended up just releasing the film with an announcement: we regret to inform you something terrible has happened with our project. The Wacko Worms mint has been postponed indefinitely. Here's the footage, let us know if you have any answers. And at that moment, naturally, the community went to a frenzy. What the hell's going on? Is it a rug? What did they do? Are they scamming us? They haven't sold anything yet. How could they? Having this, did you catch this in the film? What about this? Did you notice that the smart contract developer, it seemed like she had magical powers in this scene? Oh wait, but what about here? Her eyes did a weird flicker when we first met her. I didn't notice. You know, the conversations that I had originally envisioned when I saw all of the rocket emojis a year earlier were actually happening about the film and its semi-ambiguous ending. So that was really exciting. And, you know, that became a stepping stone for where we are now.
Yeah, it's such a cool story. And it's really clever that you spotted that and been able to incorporate that into the film and use it, bring it to the community in that way and create that frenzy. And it's a really smart idea. And I'll link it below. I recommend anyone check it out. It will, 100% worth your time and have a good watch because, it's brilliant. So that is linked below for sure. So now from where you are, having released that and started there, is there anything else you can tell us from Muggsy Media Corp where you're thinking now and what you might be working on next, or is it under wraps for the moment?
Yes, absolutely. So just a little bit more about Worms. Right after releasing the film, about a week later, I went out to London, spoke at NFT London, got a lot of people, you know, interested. We have some, you know, brilliant people on our board, you know, from Elliot Green, who's working on the Visible project, the Spike Lee NFT project, to Larry Dvoskin, who, you know, is a Grammy nominated music producer who's worked with Bowie and the Beach Boys and Bono and all these brilliant people, to Ian Udaly, co-producer of NFT NYC, NFT London, and, you know, that's literally just to name three. We have so many brilliant people on our board and working with us. But what we're trying to do, or we have done, we're completely in character with our community. So when I talk to them, I'm talking about the aftermath of the events of the film, saying we're still figuring things out, stay posted, we want to talk to you, we want to communicate with you. Because part of the goal is we wanted to create a cinematic experience for our community long after the credits roll. I have an interview recorded with someone who went to Harvard and studied witchcraft, you know, and she's talking about how, according to Western demonological tradition, some of the actions that the smart contract developer, you know, we may or may not have seen her do could resemble those of a witch, you know, from an academic perspective. So we have more content to keep the community obsessed with, you know, what happened there. So really excited there. But just two things I want to note about why I think this works. You know, aside from the really revolutionary way to perpetuate the realism of a found footage film using the blockchain, number one is education. Education has become, it's become a cliche to talk about how flawed education is in Web3. Everyone who wants to know about it knows about it. Everyone who doesn't care does not care. You know, especially now with all the stuff that's going on, they're not, you know, doing what Gary Vee calls YouTube University and watching the hour-long YouTube video of a nerd going like, the blockchain is a serious... No one wants to do that. No one wants to read the articles. And, you know, with the bear market is just doubling down. So my hypothesis is that someone will be much more likely to watch a 12-minute YouTube video that's funny and compelling and even a little bit scary that secretly educates them. Because if you hate Web3 and you even hate my film, by the time the credits roll, you understand what a smart contract is, what it means to mint an NFT, how the algorithm works to put together a Bored Ape style PFP collection with all the trades and properties getting put together. And you also understand, you know, some of the nuances of the space, like Merkle Tree is a real guy who literally goes by the name Merkle Tree. You know, you have Crypto Nova, who's a close friend of mine, who, you know, he adds his identity and wears these extravagant outfits, and it's fucking awesome. And people don't understand, you know, the underground aspects to the Web3 space. So I wanted the film to educate people on that. But number two is the marketing aspect of it. So I funded the film myself. You know, this is completely out of pocket because I wanted it to be a film first project. And I figured there's no better way to communicate that than to not sell a damn thing and release the film and say, you got it. And then, you know, after everything's happened, that's when we're going to start selling NFTs. But the relationship between the holders and the film is something that's pretty remarkable. Meaning we're working on a system that rewards NFT holders based off of how many views the film gets. So here's an example, just throwing out a number out there. Of course, this isn't locked in yet, but let's say, hey, when we reach 50,000 views, all the holders are going to get a hoodie with their NFT on it or with a Wacko Worms logo on, you know, or maybe 20% get a hoodie, 20% get a vest, 20% get a t-shirt, socks, beanie, whatever that may be. The holders are going to have a really awesome incentive to promote the film. So as they promote the film, they get their friends who are not a part of the community to watch it. That's going to grow our community. And by more people watching the film, more people's eyes are going to be on the NFTs. That means more buyers. That means larger community. That means more people sharing the film, you know, and this creates a symbiotic relationship that in my eyes has extreme potential to be the next blue chip NFT collection. So look, we'll see, you know, something, you know, exactly how we're doing it hasn't been done before. So we'll see. And, you know, you started this by asking what Muggsy Media Corp is all about. We're about throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks. I want to come up with the ideas that only a 22-year-old with nothing to lose can come up with. And that's me, you know, so we're developing documentaries, we're developing a lot of cool partnerships, part of which stem from what happened in London, part of which just from people who watched the film and reached out and wanted to be a part of the team and be a part of the journey because they see the potential. That's what this is all about. We have multiple spinoffs in the works, you know, we're trying to find the best one to pick, which is why, you know, we're gauging all of our partnerships to see, well, this spinoff would work better if we partner with this company, but this spinoff would work better if we get the funding to film in this country. So there's a lot of behind the scenes development that's happening right now that, quite frankly, I'm not in a rush for, because I think that there's going to come a point where the millions of people who are flipping NFTs in 2020 and 2021, they already miss it right now. However, there's a sour taste in their mouth. I think that taste is going to erode, and we're going to reach a point where minting a PFP is going to be nostalgic. Now, I am absolutely not saying that the PFP bull run is ever going to be the same. It won't, absolutely not. But I think that with my film and the way it captures the excitement and absolute absurdity of that bull run, I think it's going to serve as a timepiece. And people who are nostalgic of that time are going to watch the film, they're going to get a kick out of it, and then it'll age like fine wine. And then that's the perfect time to start doing them. So we're in absolutely no rush. I have no problem releasing 25 films before we even mint the Wacko Worms NFTs. I just want to continue growing this found footage film universe, found footage Web3 film universe, and, you know, seeing where it takes me. It took me to London so far, and I really don't see any limits for this. You know, so much potential here.
Yeah, good on you. I think it's a great attitude, and just getting it done and moving whilst the moment's here. And like you say, that idea of it being a timepiece, I think it's really refreshing when it kind of making fun of the culture and the community, and we'll look back on these moments as the space grows. And it will be I'm sure an iconic kind of piece of that history, which is cool. And you also mentioned the other thing, which I think is really important about kind of fandom and this incentive to share the film and to maybe get merchandise and then bring new people in, and that is the other thing that Web3 does that Web2 doesn't. You obviously have fandoms in Web2, but they don't benefit if they share the film other than telling their mate because they thought it was good. but there's this kind of like supercharged incentive to kind of bring more people in, and people they know will like it, and then the value of the whole thing growing together, which is cool, isn't it? So yeah, it's really interesting. So my next question for you was really to ask you how you think this is going to pan out going forward over the next few years, because we've got the kind of the legacy model that's been slightly disrupted, and then you've got the Web3 model. Do you think that they will exist side by side and it'll just be two kind of separate models, or that there's massive disruption coming and you know, a lot of the major films of the future are going to be built in this way, online first, with a community in Web3? How do you see the next kind of few years panning out?
Great question. I mean, I think when you really look at all of these artistic verticals in Web3 and how they've adapted to it, film is the least developed. You know, when you look at music and all the major players who are a part of that, when you look at, you know, digital art and physical assets that are verified on the blockchain, these are all far ahead of what is happening in the film world. But I think part of that is just the grueling work of creating a film. And there's a lot of different ways that you could see this happening. So Miguel, I said, you know, crowdfunded using NFTs. And I think that that's something incredibly empowering, especially when you're trying to make a feature, a high quality feature, because, you know, those cost a lot. And, you know, even getting family and friends is nearly impossible when you're trying to make a full length film. So I think we're going to continue to seeing people doing stuff similar to that. The Visible Project, which is what Spike Lee's working on, they haven't minted yet. I've become close friends with Elliot Green, who's working on that project. And him and I talk a lot. And, you know, he's so passionate about getting that done. And what they're doing is they're creating a situation where Spike Lee owns all the IP for She's Gotta Have It, one of his first film. And he's releasing it as frames with all these borders and really exciting attributes. And holders of the NFTs now are part of a community that selects films to be funded. Meaning, if I'm an independent filmmaker and you're a holder of a Spike Lee NFT, I come to you and say, hey, here's my film that I want to make. Here's a pitch, da 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 da. There's 10 of me. You, as the community, pick which ones you want to see funded. So that's really cool. Because not only are they funded, but also Spike Lee is going to, you know, lend a helping hand there. And that's just going to be, you know, there's so many people who don't have the means to make their own films. And to have that ability to pitch to a group and have that community pick what's produced, I do think is something that's powerful. And that's the other thing. You know, I mentioned earlier how I don't necessarily think the future is the choose your own story. You're like, you have a say in the writer's room and you have a say in production, because it's just having been in a writer's room with like 4 or 5 people, that's already a battlefield, let alone to open the door to 10,000 NFT holders. Like, I just can't even imagine how that would work efficiently. And unless it's like, hey, do you want to vote on when the curtains are red or blue? In which case, I don't really think people like care about that. So, you know, there's that balance of what's worth voting on. But I do think there's something to be said of what do you want to see made, you know? And that's where Mosey Media Corp, I think, you know, 5-10 years down the line could see itself being a production company that allows NFT holders to select, hey, we're working on these 5 spinoffs. What do you want to see made? And then they pick which one they're most excited about. And of course, that's helping them because they get to see what they want. But from a selfish perspective, that helps the production company. Because if Warner Brothers gets to say, hey, do you guys want to see a new Lord of the Rings film or a new Harry Potter film? And it's 75-25, they just save themselves up in one way or another. They just save themselves from a major box office bust. So that's something, being able to see what you make is going to be adapted. And, you know, you see companies like Warner Brothers doing the Warner NFT. They did Lord of the Rings. They did a Lord of the Rings NFT collection. And it didn't sell out. So they sold 5,000 out of 10,000, roughly, as of, you know, today, January 10th, when we're recording this. Last time I checked, I checked recently. But, you know, like, that's Warner Brothers and Lord of the Rings, you know? That speaks miles about where we're at with the bear market. But also, there is resistance out there amongst the studios. I mean, they're definitely interested and they're definitely aware that it's going to be a part of the future. That being said, there's, especially with FTX, it's prolonging the image of crypto as a scam, you know? And look, for a while, it was the wild, wild west. There's no way around it. It was. And there were no rules and there were scammers all over the place. It still, to an extent, is. And that's really upsetting. And I look at history to find the answer, you know? And when you look back at the American car industry, you know, the Model T Ford came out. And in the decade after that, there were 2,000 American car manufacturing companies. Today, there are 3. That disparity is unbelievable. Because when you look at crypto, all the shit coins, all this nonsense, I do think a lot of it's going to go to zero. And there's no way to tell, you know, It could be Bitcoin, Ethan, Solana are going to shit in Dogecoin in the future. You know, we don't know. But I do think that we are going to find a couple of blue chips that are going to stick around and be the basis for the growth. And, you know, I just think that this is a time of rebuilding and correcting the wrongs. You know, I don't think anyone doubts that the government's going to step in the year 2023 and create some new intense regulations. And quite frankly, that's what we need. Coinbase used to be looked at as kind of a boomer marketplace, you know, like people looked down at it because they're regulated. You know, nowadays that doesn't seem so bad. You know, people are much more intrigued by Coinbase than something like that after the FTX. So I think when we zoom out and look at things big picture, there's no way to predict exactly how the film industry is going to adopt Web3. But I do know that it's going to be in some way that no one's tried before, including myself, and that we're just in this time where throwing stuff at a wall, seeing what sticks and praying that one of those is going to be the future and, you know, be reproduced to the masses.
Yeah, it's well said. And it's, you know, there's been so much experimentation, like you say, a lot in the Wild West. And, you know, both there's been success and failure, and it hasn't gone away and is not going away. But yeah, that regulation needs to come in to kind of clear stuff up so people can have confidence to kind of move in this space. And yeah, we're working all that out. It's an exciting time to be involved for sure. One other thing I wanted to ask you, there's obviously a lot of chat about AI at the minute, AI tools, ChatGPT and DALI and Midjourney and all these things which are fascinating and mind-blowing and terrifying all rolled into one. How are you thinking about these tools when it comes to filmmaking? Are you using them in your films and in your creation process? What's your thoughts on this stuff?
That's a great question. I mean, I've used it creatively for nothing that I've released yet, but for like some titles and stuff like that, just, you know, for inspiration that you could grow from. But aside from that, I actually did use DALL-E as a special effects tool for the Wacko Worms film. So spoiler alert, fast forward 30 seconds or whatever, if you don't want to hear anything. But at the end, when Vic is laughing at Nadav having committed the murder using his iPhone, her face distorts a little bit, and we actually used DALL-E to create probably 10,000 different options for what a scary distorted witch face could look like. So, you know, we put a screenshot of Vic's face into DALL-E. We isolated her eyes and her nose in parts that we wanted to have distorted. We typed in a bunch of different options, and you know, we picked our favorite ones. We even, you know, them took those to Photoshop, tweaked them a little bit to our liking, and yeah, that's what you see at the end of the film. So a little AI Easter egg if you're looking super clearly.
Love it. But yeah, Ben, thanks so much. You've talked just brilliantly about the film industry, about what's going on with Web3, about your studio and everything here. So the last thing is just to shout out where people can follow you and your studio and keep up to date with all the awesome stuff you're doing.
Sure, thank you. Check out Wacko Worms NFT on Twitter. That's WACKOWORMS NFT. You know, that's where we're posting a lot of our updates and where future content will be posted, and the link to the film is pinned, as well as the link to our website, wackowormsnft.io. Really crazy stuff there. You can see how it was updated after the Wacko Worms tragedy, which hopefully you check out after listening to this. You could watch our film on YouTube, and the link is everywhere. So thank you so much, Luke. I mean, when we met in London, like, you know, listen to a lot of talks, a lot of brilliant people, but you had one slide or two slides that really stuck out to me when you put up on the PowerPoint and you said, all right, here's how much these major production companies invested in their, or here's how much Netflix invested in their content, and here's how much TikTok invested in their content. And I don't remember the numbers, but imagine the Empire State Building next to a garage. And then the next slide was, here's how many minutes people spend consuming Netflix and TikTok. And it was pretty much completely reversed. People spending significantly more time on TikTok, regardless of how much money was spent by TikTok on their content. So that was really cool. And, you know, that has just reshaped my way of thinking. And I appreciate you for talking. I appreciate you for taking the time to hear me out and listen to my story. And I love the podcast, and I'm really excited to listening to everything in the future.
Oh, of course, man. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on for sure. And yeah, all those links, everything you need will be in the show notes. So do have a look and check out the film and follow Ben as well. But yeah, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. So there we go. Awesome chat with Ben. Thank you for explaining this whole world to us, and great to have Ben on the show. Thank you for listening as always. If you haven't left a review yet, but you've been enjoying the show, that always massively helps. Or you can follow the show as well. Thank you for your support. Thank you to EverRealm for sponsoring as always too. All the links you need from everything we've talked about in the show and to follow on socials are in the show notes. So have a great rest of your week, and I will see you for next week's episode.